Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Podcast. This is Mark. It's all happening. Welcome, guys.
Oh, this I didn't let you introduce yourself. Yeah.
You're Matt.
I am Matt. The drummer. Yeah.
And I am Long, the steady bass player. Steady Eddie bass player.
There's always like in music movies, and we'll talk about as we get the movie, like there's always like that the bass player with or like in That Thing You Do. He was the bass player with Mystique, and then like in the movie we're doing today, the drummer is kind of not talked about a lot. I don't know. Maybe it's just like a thing in Hollywood to have one member of the band that's kind of on the outside. I don't know. But anyway,
yeah.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Yeah. We're going to get some rain here, I guess, tonight or tomorrow morning.
Oh, nah, probably not even until like Monday.
Oh, okay. That'd be cool.
It's still the thing is moving slow. It's off the shore like at 2 miles an hour. Yeah, we probably won't even get rain till Monday or Tuesday, they said.
That's better.
That's if we even get rain. The thing is moving so slow, it might hit land and just start dissolving.
Like that would be cool.
It's literally moving extremely slow.
Reminds me of Hurricane Harvey.
Yeah.
It moved 3 miles per hour.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was a hurricane. This thing's probably not even going to be a hurricane by the time it hits shore tonight.
Yeah.
I think it is going to hit shore. On Corpus tonight and then come up our way and maybe we'll get a little bit of rain, but we'll see.
Yeah,
it can't rain and it also cannot rain tomorrow because I have to mow the yard tomorrow. That's the way I'm doing that. So, yeah.
Well, I started noticing the yard is growing slower.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Same here.
Into the summer season. Thank God. So there's one thing.
Yeah.
I'm not a yard work person. I'll straight admit I hate fucking yard work. I hate mowing. Just not my thing. If I could have AstroTurf outside. Or just leaves and dirt. I'm fine with that. I'm just not really a yard. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to plant plants or save the fucking trees or whatever. That's just me. Yeah. What's so funny, Matt?
I'm not going to save the fucking trees.
Fuck these tree pushers, man. I don't give a fuck, okay? Yeah, I'm just being real. You know?
Oh, man.
When you waste a piece of paper and someone tells you you kill a tree, I was looking at him like, no, I didn't. I fucking tore up a piece of paper. That's just me.
It's already dead. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But that's good. I'm doing pretty good, too. Not too bad of a week. I took a three-day weekend. I took Friday off just to take it off. And, man, online learning is hard. I can see why these kids are struggling.
Yes.
It's like, especially when the damn Zoom meeting cuts out half the time. No wonder the kids get bored. Teachers.
My son's got hacked. Thing. Yeah.
You keep the teacher's talking, they can't hear anything. They're like, well, okay, well, I'm bored. What a disaster 2020 is as far as all that goes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have the big picture of things, but then the smaller picture of making sure these kids have what they need and things. And it's a mess all around.
Yeah.
Thanks, Trump.
My son, he's got like four or five tabs open and the teacher's going over the material in one tab. And so he's got to click over and take notes on a separate tab. And then if she happens to move on while he's trying to take notes before he clicks over, then I guess they have a thing where you have to note take as part of your assignment. So we got permission for him to just write it down. But there's like, you know, obstacles, like you said.
Yeah,
it's very, very hard, especially when you got like other kids in the house and you can't really devote all your attention.
Redonkulous is the word I would give it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And then, yeah, I don't know. It's been the story of 2020, obviously. COVID-19 and changing the way we do things. I mean, we're still podcasting remotely instead of hanging out with each other, which, I mean, I've gotten used to the remote thing, but I'd much rather hang out with you guys in person and do the show. And Long's over there like, fuck, I don't want to drive anywhere. I'm good doing it like this. I already know what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Mr. Anti-social motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Soon we will be back together. I miss doing a show. I miss doing shows of Misfit Toys too. I'd like to do that again one day. So hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully future horizons ahead. So, well, let's get into today's show officially then. We'll download this where we tell people what we watched, streamed, played, checked out this week. And whoever wants to go first, man.
I'll go first. As far as download this, I did finally download the Super Mario 3D All-Stars. What is that noise? Well, that rumbling noise. Is that?
It's not no. my house.
It's not my house. Must
no, I don't
be Matt.
Hear any rumbling.
Is that your AC cutting on, Matt?
My AC did just cut on.
Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. Anyways.
Tell your AC to be quiet. Recording.
Yeah. So yeah, I downloaded Super Mario 3D All Stars for the Switch, and man, there was one game on there I wanted to play again. It was Mario Galaxy, and that's like the funnest 3D Mario game, and I haven't played it in 10 years, over 10 years. And I've been having a blast playing that all weekend so far. Early in the week. Huh?
I've heard some people complaining about the Mario 6. There's a Mario 64 port on it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard people complaining about the port, saying that it's very, very buggy.
Oh, really?
Like the other two games are fine. But apparently the Mario 64 port is almost unplayable, is what I've heard.
Hmm. Yeah, I've only played on Galaxy. That was the number one game I wanted to play on there, so I haven't played 64.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have an emotional attachment to 64 like I do with Galaxy. But earlier in the week, I did finish watching a three-part Netflix documentary series called Fear City, New York City versus the Mob. And it was basically about how the FBI were basically trying to surveil like all five families of the mob and trying to bring them all down in one fell swoop. Because I guess for decades they have arrested people, but it's always been like someone's always getting, like, whenever they arrest a mob person or a gangster, that person's easily replaced by the criminal organization.
Yeah.
So it was basically talking about how, you know, the FBI finally united its local offices together to take down the entire organization in one fell swoop. But it's pretty cool. Very interesting. But that was my download this. Nothing too dramatic, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah. I recommend it.
And what's that again? Sorry.
Fear
City.
Yeah. On Netflix.
I've seen it.
Have to check.
I've seen it when I've been scrolling through Netflix. So I've seen the little artwork for it.
I rented a horrible movie because it's my son's birthday today, and he wanted to see.
Too?
No, even worse. Son of the Mask. No, Son of the Mask.
Oh,
horrible.
With Jamie Kennedy?
Yes.
Or is it? Is it Jamie Kennedy?
It is Jamie Kennedy.
Wow.
That movie still hasn't made back its money. It was an $84 million budget, and it only made $84 million. Sorry, $84 million budget. I think it said $84,000, but it only made $17 million its opening weekend, and then it severely dropped off. It made $2 million after that.
If I remember right, there was some weird contract reason as to why, was it New Line or Warner Brothers? I can't remember who owned the rights to the math. I think it was New Line. As to why they made that film, even though they knew it was not going to make any money, or because Jim Carrey didn't come back. But there was some reason why they went through with it. I'd have to look it up. But yeah, it should have never been made.
So Jim Carrey in 1998, he was supposed to do a Mask sequel the same year he did Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. But then he decided after playing Ace Ventura for a second time that it was dull and boring to play the same character again, so he shelved it. And then with him out of the picture, Chuck Russell didn't want to come back and direct the film. So that left like no significant people to star in the movie except for Ben Stein.
Let me interrupt you for a sec.
Yeah.
You sounded like you died a little inside. Oh,
yeah.
Did you die a little?
I died that? A little. I did. Yeah. I did die. Oh, my God.
Were there any moments in there that made you really, like, cringe?
All of it.
All of it, man.
It's, yeah. And then they had the guy that played Nightcrawler play Loki. He was also the bad guy in GoldenEye. I forget his name. But he's just horrible. Yeah, it's just dumb. Like, they tried to go, like, way cartoonish with it. A bunch of Tom and Jerry stuff, but not Alan, how Tom Alan and Jerry Cumming. Is. Yeah,
Alan Cumming.
Alan Cumming.
He played Nightcrawler.
The director almost walked out halfway through and said he regrets not walking out halfway through. So that could be a Patreon film in the future. Maybe if we do the mask 1 month.
I want to go back to what Long said about how, you know, like with kid films hit all three range of emotions. They're either love them, either feel a little stupider inside for watching them, or you die inside watching them. that really is the three spectrums of a kid film. Like, you watch that, SpongeBob, you watch SpongeBob, you feel stupid after you watch it. You watch a Pixar film,
but in a good way.
You watch a Pixar
I don't feel.
Film?
No.
Did you see the second SpongeBob movie with the weird dolphin?
No, I only like the first one.
Okay, watch the one with the weird dolphin. You'll feel dumber after you watch it.
I own it on Voodoo Long. You can use it. No, but you're right. I mean, that's basically you fall into those three categories.
Kid films.
Care Bears 2 is in the third one.
It's free on Netflix. I mean, or it's free on Vudu. It's free on Vudu, Care Bears 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm tempted to watch it.
You ever seen the Garbage Pail Kids movie? That's pretty awful.
Yes, that was pretty bad. Horrible. Another thing, I took advantage of some deals on Vudu, and I got a Gladiator and Braveheart 2-pack. I watched Gladiator. I didn't watch Braveheart.
Yeah, we've already covered those movies.
Yeah. But then I bought Mask of Zorro, and geez, it's freaking awesome. But I wanted to own it. Jackie wanted to own it.
The first one is good. The second one's not so good.
Yeah, second one not so good. But Antonio Banderas, Anthony Hopkins, and then Catherine Zeta-Jones is also really good. Too bad the sequel just in 2005 wasn't up to par.
There's been some recent rumblings in Hollywood before COVID hit about Zorro making a comeback with Antonio returning and playing the older Zorro, passing on the torch.
That'd be awesome.
So there has been some rumblings that Zorro will come back again. So we'll see.
And then what else did I watch?
Yeah. I would love to see Diego Luna get a chance of playing Zorro. I think he would be fantastic.
Yeah, it's definitely something that needs to be redone, or not redone, but like legacy sequel. Because Zorro historically in 1957 he starred in California. That character was a California based superhero. That's where his adventures were. And this time it's further south. So maybe with this third generation that you elaborate on, maybe you move back towards California and you go back to the old stuff. That could work.
Zorro versus Ice.
I think he's a fun character. I would love to see Zorro make a comeback.
But I watched up to episode 4 of The Boys, which is very Homelander is very, very disturbing. And
I still haven't watched
weird.
Past the first episode.
Yeah.
There's a the thing about milk.
Oh yeah, it gets worse, and it morphs into something worse.
Mm.
I can only imagine with Homelander. That is, what is with his the actor? Do they do something to his jaw to make it look weird? I don't know.
To make it look extra superheroish.
Really, yeah, or is that how he really looks?
It's like they're trying to go for that crimson chin look from.
It's strange.
You know, Odd Parents,
like,
Fairly Odd Parents.
We watch him.
Yeah.
Hey, I've only watched the first episode. I need to get back on it.
Get back on it, man. But I still have that's no about
desire
it.
To watch it.
No?
No, not really.
It's a slacker long.
No, I just don't feel like watching depressing shit. Dark, nihilistic stuff. You know, that's just my opinion.
I think it's worth it just for Carl Urban.
Carl Urban's awesome.
He makes a show. If it wasn't for Carl Urban, I don't think I'd be as interested in the show. He makes me want to watch it.
Yeah, 100% agree with that.
Yeah, he really makes the show work. Without him, I don't think the show works. So, well, I watched. I'm finally getting on the Cobra Kai. I'm about halfway through season two.
Yeah.
But, you know, the more I watch it, this is a show that 3 or 4 years is enough because the niche of it's going to run dry. It's already starting to feel a little dry mid-season, season two. It's like the corniness of it wears off and you start to see the flaws in it. And it's hard to look past those flaws when you get a certain point in it. You kind of accept the flaws the first season because it's kind of, oh, this is fun. It's kind of neat. It's kind of nostalgic. But getting halfway through the second season, that whole thing's kind of starting to wear off a little bit. But I'm still
enjoying it. It'll finish itself off in a high note. So.
Yeah. And
yeah, they'll bring Allie back and yep.
But it's fun. I still like the dynamic of Johnny's character and how everything you could say in the 80s you can't say now. Like he's like, well, get up, fatty. You can't call him fat. Why not? Because he's fat. Shut up, Four Eyes. It's just the things he says. It's like, it just cracks me up. You know, but it's good stuff. But
and I love how he thinks. Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I love that he thinks the dojo is like a different area of time and space. You know, people walk in and he's like, what's that? He's like, we've got asthma. And he grabs it and he throws it. Not anymore, you don't. It doesn't exist in here. All your fake peanut allergies and your gluten allergies. And I'm like, it's asthma.
And then in the first season, he had no money to really keep the dojo open, right? Now in the second season, he has money apparently, and he's buying a mirror to fix the fire. It's like, wait, what? Where'd you get money from? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the constraints of time, you know, is not elaborated on, so we don't know if this took place over a few weeks or a few months.
But one thing I did have to say is Miss LaRusso is kind of a MILF. Yeah.
Yes.
I'll leave it at that. But I also watched Superman Man of Tomorrow, the reboot for the DC animated universe.
How was that?
Man, I liked it quite a bit. It's kind of weird. It's a different take on Superman's origin. And it's kind of lighthearted, but then it gets really dark in parts. And I actually really enjoyed what they did with Superman in that film. A lot of new voices in there, new people voicing Lex Luthor, a new voice for Lois, a new voice for Superman. So that
Mr. Luthor
took a little getting used to. But I really enjoyed it. I think it's a good kickoff to the rebooted DC animated universe. And then there's a trailer on there, like a behind the scenes of the Batman Soul of the Dragon that's coming out where it takes place in the 70s. That looks like that's going to be a hell of a lot of fun to watch. But, man, it's good. DC Universe just continues on with the good stuff. And I know there's been some people that haven't liked this Superman. I don't know why. I guess they want the same old boring Superman origin. You know, they throw Lobo in this one, and Lobo's really cool. And so maybe they wanted to do it that way. I don't know. But so far, so good.
I like
that's
Lobo.
That's really all I watched this week.
I used to watch episodes of the new Justice League, you know, way back when, and I like that episode where Lobo shows up or right after Superman dies, but he really gets blown into another dimension. And he grows a beard and he's fighting off creatures with a sword, and he had to kill a wolf with his bare hands, and he's wearing this wolf cowl over his head, and he just looks friggin' Superman barbarian-ish.
Yeah, and I think Lobo's one of those characters like Deadpool that when he came out, he got overused a lot. But now I think he hasn't been used as much in recent years, so it's kind of like cool to see him again. But I know which episode you're talking about of Superman, so those are cool. But it's good stuff, man. I recommend watching it. And good kickoff to the return to the DC animated universe for Superman Man of Tomorrow. So, and then next up, we have the Batman Death of the Family coming out. It finally got a release date, October 13th. That's going to come out. So
nice.
That'll be the next DC animated, even though it's like a short film, but that's the next thing that comes out. So cool stuff. That's it, man. That's really all I watched this week. Just a couple, some Cobra Kai and Superman Man of Tomorrow. Don't get as much watching time now. Football season started.
Yeah.
Practice yeah. nights and things like that. So that's okay. So,
are they going to play today's... football every Saturday, your son? Every Saturday
yeah, we have
morning?
Games every Saturday. I think our only off week is that Saturday of Halloween. So.
Yeah.
Like next week, our game's at 3 o'clock. So I hope it's not too hot. So we'll see. All right. Well, let's get into today's featured film then, which is a movie that kind of personal to me in some ways. I'll explain why in a minute. Also requested several times by a friend of the show, Winter, who's been on a couple of episodes with us. She has texted me a few times going, "When are y'all going to do this movie? When are you going to do this movie?" And I told her we would do it for the 20th anniversary, which of course has just gone by for this film. And I was actually really surprised this movie was 20 years old already. I guess time goes by as you're getting older, and because it feels like just yesterday when I saw this film, a film that I fell in love with immediately when I watched this, and that is Cameron Crowe's semi-autobiographical film, Almost Famous. I usually don't summarize. I guess I'll summarize this one today. Basically, it follows young William, who's an aspiring rock and roll journalist, discovering music in his youth, and he gets hired by Lester Bangs to write a small piece on the band Cream, and he writes it and Lester loves it. And then he gets a call from Rolling Stone magazine and says, "Hey, do you want to follow, do you want to write for us?" And he suggests a band called Stillwater, and he gets caught on these adventures of following Stillwater around and writing this piece for Rolling Stone magazine as a young writer. And it's semi-autobiographical because Cameron Crowe really did this. He was a young writer, about 16, 17 years old, and he worked for Rolling Stone following the Allman Brothers band around. Mm-hmm. So some of this is based on Cameron Crowe's real life story as told through his eyes from with a fictional band. And the movie plays like a music record from beginning to end with adventures of these characters that we all meet along the way. And there's not a character in this movie that's not relatable in some sense to most people. If you've ever loved music in any way, you're going to love this movie. Cameron Crowe says it's his favorite film he's ever made, and he stands by that to this day. And this is just a film that makes you feel good about watching movies. And I would think this is one of those films that if you didn't like this movie, there might be something wrong with you, you know? Or you just totally don't fucking get music, you know? And I will tell the story as why this film's personal to me. In 2000, when this came out, Pearl Jam was coming to Houston, and had a friend that came into town to see the show with us. And we went and saw this movie waiting the day before the show. And my dad was out of town. And I told my dad about the movie, and he really wanted to see it because my dad liked music. We would always be in the shop where we worked together, and we listened to music and working and stuff like that. And I told my dad about this film, and unfortunately, my dad never got to see it because he passed away a couple weeks later, or about a month later after this came out. So the film always kind of holds something personal to me as a movie that I was excited to tell my dad about, and he never got to see. But it doesn't make me sad to watch the movie or anything. I still love this film a lot. When did you guys first see this movie?
I'll go first.
Yeah, you go.
I first saw this movie on, I believe, IFC channel, about 12 years ago. And I remember that when I was watching this movie, I was channel flipping, and I just happened to catch the movie like 10 minutes into it, like right after the flashback scene of William. His name is William, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. William, William's time as a kid. And then I was just kind of enthralled by it because Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, caught my attention, and he was talking about the kids writing and all that, and I just never flipped the channel, and I started watching it, and I just stuck with the movie. You know, I never planned on seeing the movie, never had any interest in seeking the movie at that time, and I knew it was Kate Hudson's earlier roles. And
she was like 19 when she made this.
Yeah. And I felt like the movie was very, very interesting. You know, rewatching it again, and it still holds up. Yeah, I still enjoy it. And I wonder, what was it? I'm trying to figure out why I never flipped the channel. You know, because it's not a movie that I usually just sit down and watch, especially something that going into blind like that. But
I think it's the movie. We'll get to you in a second, Matt. But I feel like the movie, it's like that. It's like a great record. It pulls you in.
Yeah.
It's a really great record, and you don't want to stop it. And this movie is like that. And I think in some ways that's what Cameron set out to make, a great film about friends that you can relate to and go on this journey with them.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is, just pulls you in.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think what the film does best is make you feel like you're kind of on the bus, on the plane, riding around with these guys, and you kind of feel like you're just stuck in that moment, and you're just watching it go on. I think that's what it does best. I felt like I was there.
Immersed?
Yeah, immersed. Yeah. There we go.
Well, that and William is a young writer. Who, like, when you're a kid, who didn't want to either to be a journalist or a movie star or a rock star? So there's all these things in it that whether you're a young person watching this movie or an adult, you can relate to. Everybody wanted to be the cool guy like Russell that played guitar, got the babes. You wanted to be the lead singer like Jason Lee. You wanted to be that guy who was a front man. If you're females, you wanted to be the cool chick like Kate Hudson or, you know, Penny Lane's character. You know, she plays Penny Lane. I mean, and I think that's the thing about this. And for parents, you can view this movie differently when you get older. You know, you're like Frances McDormand. You know, you want to be that protective mother or father and take care of your kids too. But you also realize you have to set them free into the world. And I think and Cameron Crowe does a great job of that in all of his films, whether it be Jerry Maguire or Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You know, he has this way of telling these coming of age stories that are very relatable to anybody who watches them.
Yeah, the first time I watched this film, my mom bought it, and, you know, it was whenever DVDs were a thing. It was starting to come out on DVDs, and she bought it on DVD, and I just kind of remember loosely following it, and all I really remember is some stuff on the bus, and then Kate Hudson getting her stomach pumped, and that's all I really remembered, so... I got to pay more attention this time, and man, this movie is it's a treat. You know, you're drawn into the story. You know, you're kind of siding with the kid because maybe you were, you know, a little, you know, repressed and, you know, a little quiet, but, you know, and he just goes on this crazy journey and just kind of, you know, hops from bus to plane and is carried along with Stillwater. And I think you get great performances from a lot of people. Everyone after this movie had a great career. Zooey Deschanel was basically an unknown before this movie, and she had some good roles. Jason Lee,
even Patrick Fugit, who played William, he was young in his movie, but if you look at his IMDb page, he's had a consistent career. He's been on a lot of stuff.
You know? Yeah. The mom is very genuine. I feel like she's the only one that is honest in the film, you know, 100% of the way.
Right.
You know, William.
I don't know. Sound like you're hating on her through our texting.
Yeah. I hate on her music preference for sure.
And the great thing about it is, like, the scene where she scalds Russell, they really had Billy Crudup on the other end of the phone, and they filmed that getting his reactions. So it's pretty genuine.
Wow. And
I thought that was really great. Really great.
Yeah. That's funny. I know. What can I think of his name? The Cream magazine owner, Philip Seymour Hoffman. he was sick, I guess, through the whole thing. Yes. And it kind of adds to his character. Flu. Yeah, his coughing and stuff just kind of, I feel like it adds to his character. And I was like, I wonder how it'd be if he was healthy. It probably wouldn't be the same.
And he only filmed for like 4 days, but he has some of the best lines in the movie, some of the most important lines. He's ultimately William's conscience, who helps him guide him through this journey and keep his head level, you know? And he tells him everything. They're going to throw chicks at you and drugs, and they're going to be your friends. And he was right the entire time, you know? And he tells him, just be perfectly honest with yourself and be who you are.
Yep. I was surprised Fairuza Balk was in this film. I didn't realize she was. And I've got a soft spot for Fairuza Balk. It's like her in The Craft. Yeah. I don't know.
What happened to her? She kind of disappeared.
Yeah, she disappeared after Waterboy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was in Return to Oz as a kid. I always liked Return to Oz. It's kind of darker. Obviously not as good as the original, but...
And entertainment's always been a cruel business. So.
Right.
Well said.
And the cool thing about this is, like, Cameron Crowe threw a lot of his own experiences on this in this movie, like where they bring William into the huddle before the concert. He actually took that from a Pearl Jam show where Eddie Vedder pulled him into the huddle before a show.
Oh, that's cool.
The plane incident is loosely based on an incident where the Allman Brothers really thought their plane was going to go down, you know. So some of this stuff was based on things that happened. Cameron Crowe has often been coy about whether the deflowering scene was really based on a real experience or not. He just kind of smirks and doesn't really say, which is, I think, the right thing to do. You know, Penny Lane is based on a real character, a couple of characters that Cameron met on his journeys. And what an amazing character she is. And Kate Hudson she's so darn adorable playing this character. Like, you legitimately feel bad for her when she takes too many quaaludes. She does some great lines in, like, the what kind of beer scene. That was that was ad-libbed, and they liked it so much that they left it in the film, because that was her only thing, was what kind of beer did he sell me for. And she is so good in this movie, and
it's probably her best role, I think.
Yeah. And people said, well, what happened after this? She went on to do a lot of art house films. She kind of stayed away from genre and big time stuff, but she's definitely acted the entire time. And that's her choice. She chose to do other films of those types. But she is really, really good in this movie. Considering she was 19 years old in this movie. Same with Patrick Fugit. He's 14, 15. He's really good. I even felt like watching this when Jason Lee was in this movie as the singer. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Like, I always saw Jason Lee in Kevin Smith films. And to me, this was like the movie that showed me, like, hey, Jason can actually act.
You know,
he's better than just a Kevin Smith film. And not to say that he did bad in those films, but this movie, to me, showed him being a little more adult. And then there's Billy Crudup. I mean, how good is he as Russell in this film? I mean, you immediately want to hang out with this guy. You want to be friends with him, you know, because he's cool. And it's like Lester Bangs tells William, like, you're not cool, man. These guys are cool. but Russell is cool. Like, you would want to hang out with him.
No, he really is. And I felt like he cares, you know. He's out of all the band members, I felt like he was the most genuine.
And that's the thing. That's why he doesn't answer William's questions. You don't know it till the end of the movie, but he was protecting William the whole time. Yep.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh yeah, Kate Hudson's character. I just think that she's been solid in every role that she's had. She's just a really good actress. Even in her, like, she did one chick flick, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and I really liked her in The Skeleton Key. It was more of like a horror thriller. It's where they switch bot. If you haven't seen Skeleton Key, she gets looped into caregiving for this old woman. This old woman really just wants to use voodoo and switch bodies with her. So it's really, really cool movie. If you haven't seen Skeleton Key, watch it. But man, this is an actress that just hasn't done anything bad that I can think of. Everything I've seen her in is really good. It was cool seeing something that, you know, I think this is her best performance. I thought it was Skeleton Key, because, you know, I like scary movies. But yeah, this movie changed, you know, my look on her. I think she's really, really good.
This movie did very well during award season, won some Golden Globes, won a couple Oscars. The crazy thing is most movies have a music budget about $1 million. Man, this movie had almost a $30 million music budget.
Wow.
Which is insane. And they got rights to all the tracks except for one, and that was the Led Zeppelin track that they ended up using. They showed the movie to Robert Plant and Jimmy Page, and they loved the movie, and they gave Cameron permission to use the song. And Led Zeppelin didn't give out songs very often. They did it very rarely. But Cameron got to use their music twice, because he got to use a song in Fast Times and he got to use a song in this. So they must have really liked Cameron Crowe to allow him to use their music more than once, which is insane. Which, of course, one of the most famous scenes in the movie is music related. Whenever, you know, the band looks like it's on the verge of breaking up, and Russell leaves and he goes to the house party and he does all kinds of drugs and he screams, "I'm a golden god," which is taken from when Cameron Crowe apparently witnessed Robert Plant saying that at some show.
No, it was Allman Brother, actually.
Was it? Oh, I thought I thought it was Robert Plant, but
and he jumped in
the pool, and you know, they come to rescue him, and we get on the bus, and we have the really great moment where they all start singing along to Elton John's Tiny Dancer. And you know, it's just one of those movie moments that's just like you're just smiling and maybe finding yourself singing throughout it yourself, you know.
I found myself changing the lyrics to "Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza."
No, Matt, no.
No? Okay.
But you can't talk about this movie and not talk about that scene.
No, yeah.
And it's funny because Cameron Crowe talked about in a recent 20th anniversary thing for this film how Patrick Fugit was terrible singing. So they had to to turn him down so you couldn't hear his mumbles. It was so bad, apparently some of the actors looked at him like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Wow.
So, and his voice broke during filming because he was in puberty.
Yeah, because he went through puberty.
Worse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, man. He sounded like the dude from The Simpsons, you know, the register, the guy who works the registers. You know,
that's my only, my small little nitpick with Fugit as an actor. He's fine when you're in like regular scenes, but when it comes to like really dramatic scenes, like the one where he tells Kate Hudson that she's being traded off for beer, you know, and then she's like telling him, "Well, it's not the real world," and then he's like, the way he acts that line, like, "Real world, what real world, what do you mean?" He was pretty monotone. when he was getting frustrated.
I think it's also kind of part of being young and learning. Because he admits he was very nervous, but he also credits Billy and Jason Lee and everyone, apparently all the older guys apparently really took him under their wing on the set and really made him feel comfortable and didn't make him feel like a kid, you know, so he gives them a lot of credit. And I think the movie came around very nicely. There is an extended version of the scene. In fact, Cameron Crowe wanted to name the movie Untitled, but Warner Brothers wouldn't have it. They said, "No, you have to title it something." And the director's cut is actually called Untitled. It's about 20, 30 minutes longer. Just a lot of little scenes to add to the characters. Nothing major. I don't feel like this is not one of those director's cuts where you feels like it's adding anything to the film to watch it. A lot of scenes where William's trying hard to get his interview. So those are more little added scenes like that, but nothing major in it, you know. But it's interesting to watch. I think the theatrical cut of this film is just as good, you know. But you know, this film is a very likable film. We've talked about before how movies that you can tell they're having a good time making the film. This is definitely one of those. This is a movie you can put on, just relax and enjoy, and you're gonna feel good after you watch it. It's not one of those, as Long likes to say, depressing, nihilistic films. You're generally gonna walk away from this film pretty satisfied.
As soon as this pandemic is, you know, over with, I'll probably start watching that shit again, you know. Right now, like, I need to be in the happy place, and Almost Famous put me in that happy place.
There we go.
That's good to hear, because man, I enjoy this movie a lot. I watch it maybe once a year. I'll put it on and watch it. One of my favorite music movies, along with, you know, Tom Hanks, That Thing You Do, which is a whole fictional story. This is more based on a real story, but I give this movie, you know, we don't give a whole lot of movies A pluses, but I give this movie an A plus. I think Almost Famous is a great film. A little interesting fact is there's a record needle dropping at the beginning of the film. And if you stay all the way to the end of the credits, you hear the record needle lift up. So it's like the whole movie is like a record playing, which is kind of cool. But I give it a solid A plus. I really enjoy this film a lot, and it means a lot to me personally too. The way I feel about music.
Yeah, I definitely give it an A for sure, at least.
Yeah, it's an A for me. And,
if you've never seen it, definitely recommend watching.
It's been a while since we've rated a movie at A.
Yeah.
All three of us.
Definitely one of Cameron.
I don't remember what the last one was. Yeah.
I enjoy Jerry Maguire a lot too, but I think that Almost Famous is my favorite Cameron Crowe film. So.
Yeah, he wrote the script and then he sent it to Spielberg, and Spielberg said direct every word of it.
Direct every word of it. Yep. Yeah. And yeah. Cool. Good stuff, man.
Yeah, man.
Good film to talk about, you know. A little bit off our, you know, we do a lot of sci-fi and action, and every now and then we throw in a comedy to keep Long happy so that he doesn't go nihilistic on us. I'm just kidding, Long. So this was a fun one to do, a little bit off of our genre. You know,
life really is suffering.
Yeah. So that gets us into our top five, and you know, I had suggested doing top five fictional bands, but we're gonna do top five bands that we never got to see in concert. But I do want to mention some fictional bands, you know, like recently A Star Is Born, the Jackson Maine band in there, you know, really good stuff. Stillwater, of course, The Wonders from That Thing You Do. You know, there's been some good bands over the years in movies, and you know, but we're gonna do top five.
I've never seen that movie.
What, which one?
Both of them.
You've never seen that
Star
Thing
is
You
Born
Do?
And That Thing You Do? Yeah.
Well, Star is Born is on HBO Max if you still have it.
Yeah. Now, the reason why I haven't watched That Thing You Do is because I used to work for Blockbuster Video.
Okay.
And when that movie was about to hit the video scene, they played that trailer every hour of you know, my whole shift. And I heard it like, and they would play that same trailer like twice every hour too.
It might be
I heard, yeah. So I've resisted watching it because of the fact that I kept hearing that song, that Thing You Do song, like hundreds of times in 1 month. You know, so I got
such a great movie though. One day,
yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah,
I know if we were ever to do that on the show, Carrie from Metal Geeks is going to want to come on because it's one of his favorite movies.
Yeah,
but let's.
I'm surprised you didn't. I'm surprised you didn't invite what's her name on the show for having us review it.
Well, I think so. She doesn't have all the mics and equipment like we have, though. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But well, let's do our top five bands we never saw in person. Long, you want to go first, man?
Yeah. Number five on my list is definitely Led Zeppelin. I wish I saw this band live. A lot of their songs are really good in studio, and I heard that a lot of it translates really well as live performances too, because even though they play these songs that are famous from their studio albums, they tend to change the songs in live performance and probably even make them better from what you heard, you know. I think there was one song that I heard on their live album that I really, really love, the live version more so than the studio version. And it was, what was that name of that song? Can't believe I haven't heard it in such a long time, too. And as soon as I think of it, I'll let y'all know. But what's your number five, man?
I had a chance to see this band, and I didn't get the tickets. It was the last classic rock band that the Houston Rodeo Livestock Show ever hosted, and it was REO Speedwagon. I'd gone 2 years before that and seen Styx and Kiss, and I wanted to see REO Speedwagon, and I never bought the tickets, and I regret it.
My number five is the Beastie Boys. Mostly because they never came to freaking Houston. They would play Dallas and San Antonio, but never got to see them. I really always wanted to see the Beastie Boys in concert. They put out this great concert film a while back called Hey, I Fucking Shot This, where they handed out cameras to like 15,000 people in the crowd, and they let everyone shoot it, and they had everyone turn the cameras at the end, and they made this concert film out of it. And there's so much energy behind it and all that, and it's so cool, and I'm like, man, I always wanted to see these guys, and but never got to see the Beastie Boys.
Hmm. Yeah, that's cool.
Nice.
Yeah, they look like a fun group to watch. What, two out of three of them are dead now, huh?
Just one. But
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I introduced Jake to Beastie Boys like 2 weeks ago.
Well, I finally found the song that I liked from Led Zeppelin that sounded better live than the studio. It was Over the Hills and Far Away.
Yes.
From the How the West Was Won live album.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent song. I love that song so much, the live version of it. My number four is The Who, with all four members alive. I know Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend are still alive, but yeah, if all four were alive and they were still doing their concert thing, that's another band that translates well from studio to live.
I saw them in the year 2000 with three of the four, because John Hasselwhite was still, John Hasselwhite was still alive when I saw them.
How were they?
Fantastic. They put on a hell of a good show.
As expected from classic old rockers, huh?
Oh, yeah.
From old school rockers that
the
worked the grind.
The most amazing thing that always blows my mind away about The Who is the fact that Roger Daltrey is tone deaf. But then look at what he pulled off in his career. That's amazing.
He's tone deaf?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And there are some bands that I heard that don't translate well live. And I heard Linkin Park, I heard, was a band that didn't translate well live. Oh. Like, their studio albums are better than their live performances. And who else was that? And some of the more modern bands, you know, that don't have a safety net while they're performing live. But yeah, what's your number four, Matt?
I have Iron Maiden as number four.
Oh, yeah.
Came to town 2013, 2014, I believe it was one of those years. But I heard the concert was actually pretty disappointing because they only wanted to play the new stuff, and they didn't want to play like The Trooper or you know, Number of the Beast, even. You know,
Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Yep. Ace is High, Hallowed Be Thy Name.
I've seen Iron Maiden.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Jealous.
Did you like them?
Hopefully they can.
In live?
Song at the Woodlands Pavilion. They brought out the huge mechanical what's her mascot called?
Eddie.
Yeah, they brought a huge mechanical Eddie and fire everywhere. It's pretty cool. So,
nice.
My number four is the same as Long's number five, is Led Zeppelin. All I'm going to say is I'm going to add a little bit of what Long said is Led Zeppelin, for people that don't know, that only listen to classic rock radio, is not just Stairway to Heaven and Immigrant Song. They have a lot of really great songs, like The Hills, that
Ramble Black Dog.
On, Black Dog, Ramble On is one of my favorites. But unfortunately, rock radio only chooses to play two or three songs sometimes. So
Black Dog is highly covered, too. Whenever Styx played here in Houston, they covered Black Dog. Heart covers Black Dog. Heart, I guess Heart will be an honorable mention since I've just mentioned them. But Black Dog is highly popular among the music community and people that listen to Led Zeppelin.
Yep. Your number three, Long.
My number three, I would like to go with Prince. There's a ton of songs I love from Prince. And and I heard he's really good as a live performer, especially when he gets on a lot of unplanned guitar solos on a lot of his popular songs. And Prince regretfully passed away, and I wish I'd seen him in concert. That's my number three.
Nice. Number three for me is Def Leppard. They've played here, I think, a couple times. I've missed them every time. They're coming back next year, and they're going to be on tour with Motley Crue, Joan Jett, Poison.
Like 25 times.
No, they're coming back. Maybe they're like the Eagles, where they just replace their lead singer and just keep on going. But yeah, they're coming back next. They're coming next year, so maybe I can catch them next year.
I know Van Halen. They're always in rough shape. Eddie Van Halen is always in drugs.
Yeah.
So he's never in condition to tour, from what I've heard.
Kind of like Axl Rose, I guess. But Axl Rose actually performed for AC/DC for a few years, right? While they
a few shows.
A few shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, a few shows. My number three is Guns N' Roses. The original lineup. I would love to have seen them with Izzy Stradley and the original members. I know they're still touring, and Axl has actually cleaned himself up, because part of the deal with Guns N' Roses reuniting was that Axl had to stay clean or he doesn't get paid. And apparently he's done very well the two or three years since Guns N' Roses has been back out there touring. And it shows. If you go on YouTube and listen to recent Guns N' Roses shows, he sounds good again. He sounds healthy. You go back and listen to some of those Guns N' Roses show where it was Axl and a bunch of guys calling themselves Guns N' Roses. He sounded like a dead horse, sounded terrible. So he does. You can tell he has improved his life. And I've always wanted to see Guns N' Roses, and hopefully one day I can still maybe get to see him.
Was it true Axl Rose was like performing on a wheelchair or something?
I think he had hurt his. He had hurt his foot few years back, and he actually used the same. It's funny. Him, Jonathan Davis, and Dave Grohl have all. Okay, Jonathan Davis had a throne he was using on his solo tour. Dave Grohl borrowed the throne and used it to do some shows when he broke his foot. And I think the throne made its way to Axl to do a few shows because Axl had some sort of surgery. So it is kind of a true story. Yeah.
Okay. What's your number three, Mark?
Guns N' Roses.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so number two. Number two is kind of tied... you two and another British, another UK type band, Pulp. But you two during their Zoo TV tour, I wish I'd seen that when it was touring around in the early 90s with all the big screen TVs and them playing some of their classic songs and songs from Octoon Baby, which is one of my favorite albums from them. I wish I'd seen U2 live. And I know that they did the Joshua Tree tour, 25th anniversary tour, a few years back. And I heard that was really good. And then Pulp is kind of a lesser known band for sure. But they were part of that wave of British pop rock that came out in the late 90s, early 2000s with Blur and Oasis.
Oh, yeah.
And... and they have so many witty songs, so many great sounding songs on there. Not very many people know them, but it's one of those. They're retired now as a band, but if you guys ever want to hear some of my favorite songs from Pulp, I'll definitely recommend them to you. Or if you want to hear something that's a little bit different, I think the Killers had some influences, were influenced by Pulp. As far as their music sound, like the Killers' first album, Mr. Brightside.
Oh, Mr. Brightside.
If you ever listen to Pulp, you can kind of hear the musical influences in Mr. Brightside album. But yeah, that's my number two, Pulp and U2.
I've got Ozzy Osbourne for number two. 4 years ago, I think it was 4 years ago, he came here, and then he came here like again. I think like the following year, and you know, it was like a farewell tour. And then it was okay. This is really the farewell tour, right after that. Cause I guess he made so much money.
Matt, he's been farewell touring since I was in high school, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mom suggested that I not go to the show because she's like, you're going to fail a drug test. That was when I was with Silver Eagle and they used to random us. So she was like, don't go. You're going to get all those fumes. but I wish I would have seen Ozzy, you know, at one point. Maybe I'll catch another one of those. Okay, this is the real farewell tour, you know, 2021.
Speaking of wheelchairs, motherfucker, you're going to be in a wheelchair tour.
Probably. Probably.
My number two is Soundgarden. I saw Chris Cornell solo, and I saw Chris Cornell with Alice in Chains, but never got to see him at Soundgarden. I know I won't now because, you know, Chris is no longer with us. You know, definitely one of the celebrity deaths that affected me big time. I still miss Chris Cornell every day, and always wanted to see Soundgarden, and just never got a chance to. You know, they were another band that just seemed to like they avoided Houston a lot. I remember them come through one time, and for some reason I couldn't go, and but never got to see it. But at least I did get to see Chris perform with Audioslave a couple times in on a solo tour. So not all was lost.
Yep.
Well, my number one band probably is pretty obvious, but I wish Freddie Mercury was still alive. But Queen is my number one band I wish I saw seen live and perform. Not the Adam Lambert Queen. Not the lead singer from what's that other band? Who cares? But
who cares?
Yeah, Queen. I wish I've seen them live in performance at Wembley or Astrodome.
Wembley.
Or Reliant Stadium. Can you imagine?
Dude, that would have
Freddie Mercury lighting up Reliant Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be
that would have been awesome. Yeah. How would you, Matt? What's your number one?
Dio? No, it's not Dio. 2 years ago, Aerosmith came into town. I missed them, and I'd really like to see Aerosmith. It's probably top on the list. They're going to come here next year in June, I think. I think they're going to come.
Aren't they like 90 years old by now?
Oh yeah, and Steven Tyler and Joe Perry are still fighting all the time. They're always breaking up and having issues. I think he fell last year from the stage.
And I've fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah, he tripped over one of those scarves or something. But
or
yeah,
his fucking hair
or his hair. Yeah, but hey, he gave us Liv Taylor. So Liv Tyler. Yeah, so that's cool too.
My number one is the original Alice in Chains with Layne Staley. Another band I know I'll never see in that form. Alice in Chains still tours with their new singer, and no disrespect to him because I think he's actually pretty good, but something about Layne Staley's haunting, powerful voice that I always wanted to see in concert. And another guy that sadly could not beat his demons and still be with us. And man, Alice in Chains, some of those early albums are amazingly fucking good. But also, you go back, you listen to them now, and you see how dark they were. You see that Layne was calling for help, and unfortunately, people weren't able to help him get past those demons, and we lost him too soon as well. But Alice in Chains, man, it's my number one.
So, good, yeah. Number one.
Yeah. Oh, man. Give ourselves a round of applause. We all did really good at the top five.
Heck yeah. If you took all those bands and you put them in one concert, just blow your ass away, you know?
Yeah. It was called Live Aid.
What's the best concert y'all have ever seen, real quick?
That I've ever seen.
Kiss.
I mean,
it's
Kiss, but my problem with Kiss is it's theatrical. It's not really like a true
Exactly. performance. You brought the visual aspect into it.
Nine Inch Nails in Toyota Center, the Northern Lights tour. That was a pretty good concert.
Yeah, I was gonna. It's funny, my two best, as big as a Pearl Jam fan as I am, the two best live shows I've ever seen were Nine Inch Nails on the. I've seen a few times, but they're always great. And then Rage Against the Machine at the Astro Arena in 98, 99. Absolutely incredible. Rage Against the Machine is literally like a bomb that goes off and keeps exploding for 90 minutes. And then when it's all over, you take a breath and you're like, holy shit. Man, that's how awesome Rage is. And then Nine Inch Nails. Those are probably the two best live bands I've ever seen. But yeah. So, good stuff.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into some news, man. We got a few things to talk about here. HBO Max has went ahead and announced that all the DC Universe stuff is going to be moving over to it. DC Universe is actually going to stay online all the way till February of next year, and then it's going to go offline, and it's going to become just a comic book reader. They're going to rename it. You can subscribe to DC Universe if you want to just read the comics, but all the movies and original programming is all going to go to HBO Max. And with that, they announced that Harley Quinn is going to get a third season. Of course, nice. They already announced that Doom Patrol is going to get a third season. Titans is filming its third season right now. So, good news for people who are fans of those shows. I actually really like Titans. Even though I haven't watched the second season yet, I enjoy the show. So it's good news for people to watch that. And let me see if I can read my own handwriting here. Oh, we have a She-Hulk Cassie announcement. I don't know how to say her name.
Tatiana Maslany.
Tatiana Maslany.
Yeah, Maslany.
I guess she's known from Orphan Black, not a show I watched, but people.
It's a really good show.
People seem to be really down with this casting. They seem excited about it. So.
Yeah. When you have an actress who plays at least 10 different personalities in one show.
Oh, that's that show?
Yeah.
Oh, I have seen like one episode of that. Okay.
Yeah. 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 You'll get some. Thankfully, she'll only act two different personalities. Or actually just one, because She-Hulk gets stuck as She-Hulk. She doesn't turn back into Jennifer Walters at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It'll be a fun ride to watch for sure, and I can't wait to see Mark Ruffalo again in his role as Bruce Banner. Right. He is my favorite version of Bruce Banner. You know, as far as
the especially Hulk once they made him Smart Hulk, I really liked the version in Endgame.
Yeah.
In other casting news from Marvel, Jonathan Majors, who is from the recently Lovecraft Country on HBO Max, which is very popular. Apparently, he's going to play Kang in Ant-Man 3, which there's been a lot of rumors that Kang is going to be the next big bad guy in the MCU. So I'm wondering if they're going to have him appear in Ant-Man 3, that it's probably a smaller role just to introduce him. It also opens up the fact that we are probably going to get a black actor playing Mr. Fantastic, which is kind of cool. Because anybody knows the story of Kang, Kang is Reed Richards' son from the future. You know, so I think that's kind of cool that we're going to get some interesting or some changes, I guess, in the Marvel Universe and get some fresh blood. So I'm really looking forward to a really good Fantastic Four movie. So, cool stuff.
Yes.
And from everything I've heard about Lovecraft Country is he's really great in the show. So I think that's, you know, I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard good things about the show.
Yeah.
And I've been meaning to watch it.
A lot of rumors going, nothing solidly confirmed, like Variety or Hollywood Reporter hasn't picked it up yet, but apparently Henry Cavill is signed on for three more films and is going to come back and play Superman, which we've kind of known that this is in the works for a while. Henry, from the beginning, has said, I haven't left the role yet. I still want to do it. So maybe they just haven't crossed the T's and dot the I's, and we'll get an official announcement sometime this week.
Yeah. And
I don't think there's anyone that's going to complain about him coming back.
I don't. I really want someone to write a really good Superman script for him, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. Especially if the next four years won't turn out the way I'd like them to turn out. I need something that will inject some hope and positivity into my movies, you know?
Wording. Hope.
Yeah. Hope. Hope yes. And a direction of justice.
Well, on October 30th, long we have something to look forward to is The Mandalorian season 2 starts, and we got the trailer this week. And
that
was a good trailer. Some action, some humor, a look at what the storyline could be as the child may have to be delivered to a group of warrior sorcerers, the Jedi. Got a look at Sasha Banks in the trailer. No look at Boba Fett or possibly Ahsoka yet, but there's people that say that Boba Fett's jetpack is on the back of the Mando speeder. There's people that even claim that that's Luke's X-Wing in there. I don't know. People are just reaching, I think, but I really like the scene where the baby Yoda, the child, hides in his pod, like, oh shit, it's fixing to happen.
Yeah.
But it feels like there hasn't been a whole lot to watch this summer at all. other than a few shows and a few movies. So really looking forward to season two of The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Heck yeah.
I'm waiting to see what direction the show goes, you know, because, you know, it's kind of weird that he was sticking to the rule that Mandalorians don't take off their masks, you know, but right. in the Clone Wars and Rebels, they took off their masks all the time.
Yeah.
So what's your theory on that, Mark? Is it just inconsistent storytelling or
either that, or maybe there's a reason behind it?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I don't know.
Maybe,
but you know, then again,
it's like Old Testament versus New Testament with the Mando stuff.
Clone Wars and Rebels are, well, Clone Wars is almost, 20 years before Mandalorian, 20 to 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Rebels is 12 to 13 years before. So maybe the Mandalorian and in this timeline are going back to their old ways or trying to keep their helmets on. Who knows? Maybe they'll reveal one day. But yeah, it's a good point. But he did take his mask off in the season finale.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of rumors going around too that Pedro Pascal was not happy on set and that he walked off season two. There's been nothing to confirm that either. But what's funny is though, even in the first season, there's a lot of scenes in the first season where he's not in the suit because he was filming Wonder Woman. He was flying back and forth from filming Wonder Woman and filming Mandalorian, and he did just a lot of voice work on season one. So you know, maybe it's just a story someone took and tried to turn into something that it's not. You know,
maybe so.
Who knows? But that's all the news I got this week, unless you guys had anything. So, but let's preview next week's film. We have 1 week left before we start Halloween Horrors 2020, and we're going to do another anniversary film, a movie that's a very popular film for a lot of people too. It's 15 years old already, and that is. There's been some controversy behind Joss Whedon lately as far as the DC Justice League film goes, but we're not going to talk about Joss Whedon's controversy. We're going to talk about his really good science fiction film he made next week, and that is Serenity.
Y'all got on this boat for different reasons, but y'all come to the same place. So now I'm asking more of you than I have before. As sure as I know anything, I know this. I am to misbehave. I'm taking your sister under my protection here.
The only people she's a threat to is us on this boat.
It isn't safe. They're coming.
I think we better go.
Where are you hiding, little girl?
The Alliance wanted the reason they shouldn't have sent an assassin.
Every minute you keep River Tam from me, more people will die. This was your fault.
I don't murder children.
I do.
The Alliance has gone to enormous trouble to find you, friend. You'll know what it is you're carrying.
You know that girl.
She is a mite unpredictable. Mood swings of a sort.
It's worse than you know.
It usually is.
It's a fair bet the Alliance knows what's coming.
No. They're not gonna see this coming.
Let's be bad guys.
We're not alone.
No more running.
This is gonna get pretty interesting.
Define interesting.
Oh God, we're all gonna die?
I want to resolve this like civilized men. I'm not threatening you.
I'm unarmed.
Good.
This movie, of course, spinned off from the very popular TV show Firefly. It's got a huge fan base, very, very popular. The movie has found a huge popularity on Netflix and through home video. A lot of people for years and years tried to save Firefly, but now the actors have either gotten too old, some of them have passed away. So it looks like we're not going to get a Firefly revival unless it's done as a reboot. But Should be fun to talk Serenity next week on the show.
Damn shame! Damn shame! Joss Whedon never used his all that capital he gained from Avengers and proposed it to Disney. Yeah. You know, so
yeah, because Serenity, Firefly was a great show, and Serenity was a good cap off to it with the movie, and it's probably the best thing I ever liked that Whedon did. And not that I didn't like Avengers, but Avengers wasn't his property. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. Firefly was his property, and I really enjoyed it. So we'll talk.
Who knows if he's still interested in doing it? Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? So we'll talk Serenity on next week's show before we get into October and scary movies and stuff. And be paying attention to our social media this week as I will be officially announcing what our Halloween movies are to the public. We three already know what they are, but everyone else doesn't. So secret. But as always, thank you all for listening. This has been the Rebel Radio Podcast at therebelradiopodcast.com. And join our Patreon for just $2 a month so you can get exclusive episodes. And as always, we thank you for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, who's almost famous.
Only in our own minds. As it's all happening, thank you very much. Until next time, remember, just go there and do it.
Do it.
Do it.